not mine. Not a chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Right smack dab in the middle of it. Right smack dab in the middle. We are right smack dab.
The Secret Truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome back to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler, along with
Charlotte Littlefield.
Yeah, welcome back, Dr. Roy W. Spencer. We certainly are enjoying your visit this evening.
And thanks for having me on tonight.
You were saying earlier that something. What are the opinions of your fellow colleagues and meteorologists about global warming in general?
Well, 20 or 30 years ago, there didn't used to be anybody trained in the discipline of climatology specifically. We were basically all trained as meteorologists. In the last 10 or 15 years. What we've had is a lot of these climate experts that are doing the climate modeling now are not meteorologists by training. They are physicists that have come from different disciplines. For instance, NASA's leading climate expert, James Hansen, isn't an atmospheric scientist by training. He's an astrophysicist. And I think what you find is that a lot of these current climate experts think they know more about how the climate system works than they really do. They have very simplistic views about how the climate system works. Now, in contrast, people like me, meteorologists by training, I think you will find a majority of meteorologists, including the TV meteorologists you see on TV, are skeptical about mankind's influence on the climate system. And that's because they understand how complex weather is. They understand there's a lot of things we don't understand, and they appreciate the fact that Mother Nature, that weather systems act in such a way to reduce heat buildup, which is what global warming is. It's supposedly an unnatural buildup of heat that we're causing, and it's natural for a meteorologist to believe that that is something that Mother Nature is going to fight against. But the climate experts claim otherwise, and I think they're wrong.
You know, I've often thought about the ice ages, that our planet has gone through in the past. I think the most recent one was about 12,000 years ago. But I don't, let's start looking at just the basics first before we start, ringing the alarm that, the ship is sinking. When I haven't heard a lot about from the field of, climatologists or, like you said, the supposed, I would call them supposed experts. Like you said, they're not necessarily trained. They're out of their discipline. Let's start with that. And then, also there's these other large, huge things that the general public, at least I don't know a lot about and that I would love to know more about from climatologists, like pertaining to what brings on the ice ages? Why do they end? Like, for example, the volcano, and this is a question directed right now, the Iceland volcano, what type of effect is that going to have on the weather in Europe or in other parts of the world?
Well, let's start with the Iceland volcano. As volcanic eruptions goes, it's at least in terms of climate-altering volcanic eruptions, it's pretty puny. It's probably a few hundred times weaker than Mount Pinatubo that erupted in June of 1991 in the Philippines. When Pinatubo erupted, we definitely saw a cooling effect for the next 1 to 2 years in the northern hemisphere summers over land. And like I said, that volcano put out hundreds of times more material, plus it pumped it up into the stratosphere, which is where you basically have to put material in order to affect the climate. That weak volcano in Iceland was mainly putting out ash, which will rain out in a matter of days, and it'll be gone. It won't have any effect. Now, as far as the ice ages goes, that gets a little more complicated. The prevailing theory that I don't necessarily ascribe to is that the ice ages were caused by very small changes in the geometry of the Earth and the Sun, you know, that the orbit of the Earth around the Sun goes through very slow changes that takes tens, if not hundreds of thousands of years to occur, and the prevailing theory is that that very small change in the orbit caused a very small change in sunlight hitting the Earth, which then caused the ice ages and the interglacials, the warm periods in between the ice ages. Now, Jim Hansen, who is Al Gore's main scientific advisor, Jim Hansen of NASA, thinks that because that was such a small change in sunlight associated with those changes in sunlight, or changes in the geometry between the Earth and the Sun, that since it caused the ice ages and the warm interglacials, which were like many degrees C of temperature change, that proves that the climate system is really sensitive. In other words, Jim Hansen uses the ice ages as evidence that the climate system is very sensitive to anything like us putting more CO2 in it or cows putting more methane into the atmosphere. So he actually uses the ice ages as evidence of what he claims, which is that we will see strong global warming. On the other hand, I don't think, on the other side of this issue, I don't think we really know what caused the ice ages. The main interglacials and the main, really cold ice ages cannot be explained by those orbital cycles. So this is an area that isn't well understood, and I basically have decided I don't think the ice ages have anything to do with the current problem. What I worry about is how the climate system today works. You know, not how it worked hundreds of thousands of years ago or millions of years ago. How does it work today, and how is it going to respond to the CO2 we're putting in the atmosphere today? That's what I work on, and that's where we use our best available global satellite data from, you know, our best NASA satellites to try to figure that out.
That's why
you're saying these models today are too sensitive, right?
Yes, the models are programmed to be too sensitive. In other words, if you put extra CO2 in them, like we're doing, we're putting extra carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, and it causes a little warming tendency in the models. The models respond by reducing cloud cover slightly, which lets more sunlight in and then amplifies the warming. And you can tune these models to create just about as much warming as you want, depending on how you tune them to change cloud cover. And now we get back to the issue of, okay, how do clouds change with warming? And that's the issue that I think the scientists have made the big blunder on. They have simply confused cause and effect when watching how cloud and temperatures change together.
And then there's two things that you guys have brought to my mind. The one is, what about the when I was growing up, my grandfather used to have coffee with him in the morning. He'd say, "There's always been a hole in the ozone." Does the hole in the ozone have anything to do with today's arguments about for global warming? My grandfather, like I said, seemed to be very convinced that it always existed, and that
right. Basically, there's virtually no connection between the ozone problem and global warming. I say virtually no. The ozone depletion issue had to do with the man-made chemicals that we use for refrigerants finding their way up into the stratosphere, destroying ozone, which then lets more ultraviolet radiation in and could potentially cause damage to living organisms. But it turns out that the amount of ozone in the stratosphere does have a small effect on the energy balance of the planet, too. So there's
okay.
a slight...
Hold that thought. We're about to be cut off with a break. Please hold that thought. We'll be right back.
Okay.
You feel tired when talking about important topics like money and politics?
Sorry.
Are you confused by words like the Constitution or the Federal Reserve?
What?
If so, you may be diagnosed with the deadliest disease known today, stupidity. Hi, my name is Steve Holt, and like millions of other Americans, I was diagnosed with stupidity at an early age. I had no idea that the number one cause of the disease is found in almost every home in America, the television. Unfortunately, that puts most Americans at risk of catching stupidity, but there is hope. The staff at Brave New Books have helped me and thousands of other foxaholics suffering from sports zombieism recover. And because of Brave New Books, I now enjoy reading and watching educational documentaries without feeling tired or uninterested. So if you or anybody you know suffers from stupidity, then you need to call 512-480-2503 or visit them at 1904 Guadalupe or BraveNewBookstore.com.
Side effects from using Brave New Books products may include discernment and enlarged vocabulary and an overall increase in mental functioning.
Making the right decisions is a challenge to investors. Are we going to see economic growth, slide into a recession, or at worst, depression? Hi, Ted Anderson from Midas Resources. We all know when a company acts irresponsibly, divesting ourselves in a move towards safety is prudent. When the market becomes volatile, U.S. treasuries are a safe haven. But what do you do when the U.S. government overextends itself and spends beyond its means? Many investors are turning toward gold as a common sense alternative to traditional paper investments. Midas Resources has put together a powerful book titled 10 Reasons to Own Gold, discussing costs, benefits, risks, featuring full-color illustrations, weights, and measures. The book is free and can be yours by calling 800-686-2237. Paper investments are dwarfed by gold's 6,000-year history. Discover how gold may be right for you and your IRA by calling 800-686-2237. Whether buying or it's time for you to sell, the book is free. Call 800-686-2237.
Let's talk tough. Let's talk comfort. Let's talk about Down Home Value, made in the USA blue jeans, like you wore as a kid. Remember?
There's a place down in Tennessee where they make blue diamond gusset jeans. They show pride in every stitch. Guarantee you love the way they fit. Put a diamond gusset in the crotch where you need it most. Blue diamond gusset's got it. Others don't.
For good old-fashioned comfort, get diamond gusset jeans. Every stitch guaranteed. And our Defender motorcycle jean comes Kevlar reinforced. See them at GUSSET.com. That's gusset.com. Or call 888-848-7738. That's 888-848-7738. Diamond gusset jeans got it. Others don't.
It's no secret why pharmaceutical companies and mainstream media often question the safety and effectiveness of herbal supplements. But isn't it ironic that mainstream pharmaceutical companies are the ones who manufacture overpriced prescription drugs that produce dangerous side effects? Do your own research and compare the herbal supplements offered at ResearchedHerbs.com. Herbal supplements at ResearchedHerbs.com are backed by over 1,100 published clinical trials and endorsed by over 250,000 healthcare professionals in 76 countries worldwide. ResearchedHerbs.com is home to the world's number one selling liver supplement formula, and best of all, our products are manufactured by a company that's been around 80 years, produces 20 billion herbal pills every year, and is still family owned. Call 1-800-973-1486 or go to ResearchedHerbs.com. ResearchedHerbs.com supplements. All the goodness with none of the side effects.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN, great talk radio starts here.
Welcome back to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler, along with
Charlotte Littlefield. Welcome back, Dr. Spencer, and I apologize for interrupting you. You were making a point about the ozone.
Oh, yeah, just that for the most part, those are two separate issues. The ozone depletion problem and the global warming issue are basically two separate issues.
And so what I thought I was understanding was that the ozone lets in a certain type of light spectrum. Is that correct?
Right. Ozone in the stratosphere provides a natural shield against most of the ultraviolet radiation that comes from the sun, and ultraviolet damages everything, you know, including living organisms. So, you know, if you deplete the ozone out of the ozone layer, then, you know, you run the risk of having more damage. Now, it turns out that most of that ozone depletion that has occurred in the past, which, by the way, isn't necessarily entirely man-made either. We think that volcanoes have something to do with ozone depletion as well. Most of it occurs near the poles where the sunlight isn't very strong anyway. So, to me, I don't worry about the whole ozone depletion problem, and I really don't think it would have been a serious problem. But in any event, it was a whole lot easier to fix that problem than it is the global warming problem. Some people think, oh, well, we fixed the ozone problem by, you know, changing refrigerants. We can fix the global warming problem. Well, no, they are two totally different issues. Ozone depletion had to do with a man-made chemical that we could find alternatives for. Global warming, on the other hand, has to do with the use of energy. Everything humanity does requires energy. And the only large-scale source we have of energy on this planet is carbon-based fuels. You can get a little bit out of solar and a little bit out of wind, but it's not a very energy-intensive source. You know, it's a very diffuse source because it's not stored the way carbon-based fuels are. And if you don't have any alternatives, then it doesn't make much sense to punish the use of carbon-based fuels. You're just going to kill people and make, you know, humanity miserable. Right. So they're two very different issues from the standpoint of trying to solve them technologically.
Right, and exactly. And they may, even if they were to put, you know, the carbon tax on everybody and we were to go that route, it could very well be that that's not the genesis at all. And in fact, there seem to be a lot of indicators that that's not, and that the models are very weak and based on poor assumptions. Another thought that came to my mind during you two discussing was the idea of, okay, you're talking about cloud cover, not cloud cover. What about when our planet goes through a dusty area of space? You know, like sometimes we get a lot of meteor showers and sometimes we don't. And I'm under the impression that sometimes we go through, like, dusty parts of space and you get little particles that work their way down. They're not at all meteors or anything like that. They're literally tiny particles.
Right. Well, those are – well, my understanding is that there are so few of them. They really don't have any effect on the climate system. There's just too few of them to make any difference. There's a huge amount of natural particles that are stirred up by the wind constantly all around the world, whether it's from the ocean surface or from desert surfaces or just regular vegetated land surfaces. So there's always particles being, you know, naturally pushed around. And, of course, we'd add some particulate pollution ourselves through industrial activity, which has been reduced a lot over the years by putting scrubbers, for instance, on coal chimneys, you know, on these power plants. So, yeah, as far as I know, the meteor connection is too weak to have any effect on climate.
Mm-hmm. Right, but I wonder, is it anything that we're tracking? Do we have, like, big filters up in space that go, okay, we're going through a dusty part? Does NASA look at those kind of things? Or are they more?
Well, I imagine NASA probably does. It just is. NASA does a lot of different things. You know, there's different people that do different things for NASA, highly specialized, and we generally don't interact with each other because our fields don't overlap. So I'd rather not, you know, speculate about what goes on in that field because I really don't know.
Sure. Yeah, and then how, if that would at all interfere or impact cloud formation? You know, George and I follow this thing called chemtrails. Are you familiar with the concept? It seems that a lot of this is how I understand it. You know, 50 years ago when a plane took off, usually a lot of black particulate was, you know, spewed out the end and the plane, you know, got up and it was pretty common to see a lot of pollution come out of the plane. Well, the engines have evolved and they use different types of fuels now, and a lot of times they'll a fuel, an engine will leave a long trail, not just because it's going through condensation or temperature change or anything like that, but also because they're, for certain types of efficiency on some of these jets, they're actually putting a little bit of jet fuel in the air. You know, a little bit is coming out, and that has to do with, but they're actually getting, you know, by far better gas mileage, and it's way more energy efficient, these higher tech jet engines. But the idea that a lot of times these trails that are left behind, they don't dissipate. They seem to turn into thin clouds. And there's a lot of people, you know, a lot of different people's perspective on this. What are your thoughts?
I haven't seen any evidence that would suggest there's anything weird going on with jet exhaust. There's always byproducts of combustion. There always will be. There's no way around that. Most of what you see that comes out of the tail end of a jet when it's flying up at altitude, you know, if it looks billowy and white, or, you know, red in the sunset or something, then that's water vapor, because that's a natural byproduct of combustion of fossil fuels, is you get water vapor. So that's mostly what that is. Of course, you're going to get some particulate stuff coming out too, some soot, especially when these jets take off. You see some of the, you know, well, it's like the exhaust out of a diesel truck. You know, you get a certain amount of soot because jet fuel is sort of high quality diesel fuel. So, you know, I don't think there's anything nefarious going on there or dangerous. I do think that there is a lot more jet traffic than there used to be. And there are a few scientists that have worked on this issue, because there's probably more high-altitude cirrus cloud now as a result of the increase in jet traffic over the northern hemisphere. I once looked at that recently. I looked at how much jet fuel has been manufactured in the last 50 years. And it has gone up dramatically. Of course, you know, the more we use jets, the more jet fuel has to be manufactured. So it's a good indication of what's being used. And those high altitude clouds actually do have a small warming influence. And I guess I would think there'd be more scientists working on that. There's only a handful of scientists working on the possibility that some of the warming we've seen in the last 50 years could be from increased jet traffic laying out that high cirrus cloud layer up there.
And well, that cirrus cloud, for the listening audience, a lot of us can't remember, you know, our biology. Can you explain to us exactly what a cirrus is as opposed to a cumulus nimbus or whatever? Can you do that on the other side of the break? I hear that break music coming up again. Okay, we'll see you on the other side.
UtopiaSilver.com believes, as the Declaration of Independence states, that our rights come from God, not from government. The only lawful purpose of any government is to protect and secure the rights of the people, and no man or government has the authority to take what has been given to us by God. Among these rights are life, liberty, property, and the pursuit of happiness. And America's government has ceased to be the protector of liberty and of the people's God-given rights. But we, the people, can return America to greatness if we are willing to stand up and reassert our stolen rights. We ask that you join Utopia Silver in changing America's course in history. To save on health care and improve your health, call Utopia Silver at 888-213-4338. For a limited time, new customers will receive 50% off all colloidal silver and colloidal gold supplements. Visit us today at utopiasilver.com. That's U-T-O-P-I-A Silver, utopiasilver.com. Or call 888-213-4338. That's 888-213-4338.
You may be new to freeze-dried foods. You may have storable food questions. You may want to buy your freeze-dried foods from a very reputable company and not go broke in the process. Welcome to the Freeze-Dry Guy. Okay, actually, we're more than just one guy. We're a California-based company that's been serving our U.S. military and other government agencies with the finest in freeze-dried storable foods and emergency rations since 1970. See all about us at freezedryguy.com. With Freeze-Dry Guy freeze-dried foods, you can and will be ready for just about any
any unexpected crisis. Freeze-dried Guy foods are delicious, require little preparation, and will taste just as fresh decades from now as they do today. Just add hot water and serve. Backpackers consistently rate us number one year after year as the best tasting and ease of preparation. Isn't that what you want for your family? Visit freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-FOOD. That's 866-404-3663 or go to freezedryguy.com. Freeze Dry Guy, the best you can buy.
You owe the IRS money you can't pay, then listen carefully, because you already know that the problem won't go away by itself. You can get help today from the leading tax expert in the country, Dan Pilla.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. The IRS isn't going to just forget about you. Right now, the IRS is hiring thousands of tax collectors to go after delinquent accounts just like yours. That's why you need to take action today, and I can help. I take a simple but proven approach to solving your tax debt problem. First, I stabilize collections so you don't have to worry about wage and bank levies. Next, I build a detailed plan to get your debt reduced to the fullest extent possible, sometimes even eliminated. Finally, I work with you every step of the way to get your problem solved once and for all. So call now for a free consultation. Call 1-800-346-6829.
Dan Pilla will solve your tax problem, guaranteed. He's helped thousands of people, and he can help you too. Call us today at 800-346-6829. That's 800-34-NO-TAX.
Say goodbye to clogged gutters and the dangerous job of dangling from a ladder to clean them, and say hello to the gutter brush. I recommend this effective, affordable, do-it-yourself solution because it works. Imagine a giant cylinder-shaped brush that fills your gutter, providing continuous 360-degree protection by blocking leaves and debris while allowing water to flow right through. Installation is as simple as sliding the gutter brush section into your existing gutter. It works with any roof or gutter type and doesn't require any tool for installation. Don't make another bad investment by spending thousands of dollars to keep your gutters flowing. In most cases, just the $300 to $400 will protect your entire home, and you can do it yourself. Trust me, this is a great product. Just visit gutterbrush.com today or call 888-397-9433. That's gutterbrush.com, 888-397-9433.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio? Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Welcome back to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler along with
Charlotte Littlefield. Welcome back, Dr. Spencer. And I'd like to make a correction before we go on. I did not learn about clouds in biology.
You did?
No.
Charlotte Littlefield, you sound
nice. I'm pretty sure it was physical geography, if I have to remember back. But anyways, if you could clarify a little bit for the listening audience, you know, just what is a cirrus cloud? And again, reiterate the idea that perhaps nobody's looking at that impact, that jet increase and all that.
Yeah, we were talking about the possible influence of jet traffic on the climate system because jets do put out quite a bit of water vapor up 20, 30, even 40,000 feet in the atmosphere. And when you put water vapor up that high where it's really cold, it turns into cirrus clouds. Cirrus clouds are high-altitude ice clouds. It's the thin, wispy stuff you see up there, but sometimes it can get rather dense and diffuse looking. But the main thing is that it's high up in the atmosphere, very cold, made out of ice particles. And that's what, jet traffic generally, generates up there. Sometimes, you know, you see a jet up there, you can tell there's a jet up there, but you don't see a contrail behind it. That's because it's flying through air that is so dry that even the water vapor it's pumping into the air isn't enough to make a cloud. Other times when you do see a contrail, with a really bright white billowing contrail behind it, a cloud that forms, that's because the air up there was more humid. And in fact, there have been studies done where they've actually flown planes through the contrails and sampled how much ice is in them. And it turns out that when the atmosphere is humid up there, not humid enough to create a cloud, and a jet flies through and creates a contrail, a lot of what you see in that contrail is actually water vapor that's been sucked out of the air and has condensed on the ice particles to make them even bigger and even more numerous.
I see.
Which is kind of interesting, you know.
Yeah.
But anyway, the whole point of this was that these high-altitude cirrus clouds, ice clouds, do have a warming effect. Climate researchers know that. And there's been a big increase in jet traffic, especially in the northern hemisphere, in the last 50 years. And by golly, that's where most of the warming has occurred, is in the northern hemisphere. In fact, the closer you get to the pole, the stronger the warming has been in the last 50 years. And if you look at jet traffic, that's where the most jet traffic is. The closer you get to the North Pole, the more jet traffic you have, because a lot of, you know, planes that go from you know, one side of the world to the other end up going across the pole.
Okay.
That's really interesting.
Dr. Charlotte, let me make a comment, okay, just a second, okay?
Okay.
We talked, we touched briefly on this chemtrail dynamic. Well, I've been observing this stuff for about 7 to 10 years, okay? And I have definitely seen multiple planes in the air, 6 to 7 planes at any one time. And I have seen over Austin skies, I've seen these planes put up all the cloud cover all day long.
Yeah,
to me, it's not just commercial jets flying through the air. It seems like it would, would imply some kind of program. That's all I would, you know, have been observing. But I've been
Anytime you see jets flying in formation, you know it's military.
Well, the thing is, though, Doctor, is I have seen planes come with parallel, flying parallel, but they were really high altitude planes. They're white planes. Now, some people say that this is weather modification, and other people have more sinister types of ideas about it. But is there any weather modification programs that you're aware of like that?
No, and it would be a waste of time anyway, because there's really nothing you could do.
Yeah.
It's very difficult to modify weather. About the only thing you can do is if you take the material that you can seed a cloud with and fly into a cloud that is almost ready to rain anyway, you might be able to nudge it into raining. The trouble is that researchers have never been able to prove whether they had any effect or not, because you never know what the cloud would have done if you didn't see it.
Some of the flights that I have observed is not in cloudy weather at all. They're on clear days. These planes are putting up cloud cover all over the skies of Austin. I've seen this
What it does is, and I've observed it too, because we hear a lot about contrail, chemtrail, is that the day will be blue sky, and then by the end of the afternoon, it's a haze. In my mind, it's actually affecting, you know, the weather. I mean, not that it's making it rain or not rain, but it'll take a perfectly blue sky and turn it into a cloudy haze and when you mix that in with the Texas heat, or you mix it in, it's I like to think of it as plane pollution at the best. And at the worst, it's potentially somebody's trying to control the weather. Or worse yet, you know, there have been people that claim to have had these experiences where the clouds will form above their communities and some sort of particulates come down, and they capture them, they send them to the lab, and they're filled with barium and I can't think of the other two, aluminum I think is one, barium. But at any rate, at best, we're talking about serious air pollution. I don't mean air pollution in the sense that affects asthma, but it certainly affects the quality of the day, you know, because you can have a perfectly beautiful day that turns into a hazy, you know, mess because of the jet traffic.
All I can say is I've watched clouds my whole life, you know, as a meteorologist of all kinds, including the kinds that planes put out. And I have never seen anything that would lead me to think that what we experience is anything other than the normal exhaust that comes out of either commercial or military aircraft. I'm not saying that it doesn't happen. I'm just saying I haven't seen anything that would lead me to suspect anything different is going on.
Yeah, and I will agree that there's been a huge increase in the travel, in air traffic. No question about that. If you were to see a map of how many planes, you know, thousands of planes are crossing
the
United States
number.
Every hour.
And we've got some really good high-resolution satellite imagery now of days over the U.S. when the air mass is fairly humid but still clear. And by midday, boy, the sky is just crisscrossed with all of these jet contrails. It's really dramatic at times.
Yeah, and so that can be, it's worrisome. I think it's something that, you know, we all need to continue to pay attention to. But can we return to the idea of the weather being affected by things beyond the stratosphere, I guess? Okay, when you said the sun, a lot of people, as far as I understand it, the sun's quiet right now. And it
right,
has
yeah,
been...
as far as sunspot activity, the sun has been pretty quiet recently. And it's a good thing you bring it up, because I tend to not bring it up when I'm being interviewed, because I'm not a big fan of the theory that sunspots can affect the climate system. It's sort of an obscure theory. It's possible. You know, the theory goes something like sunspots affect the rate at which cosmic rays come into the Earth, and cosmic rays apparently can they've found this out experimentally, can create cloud condensation nuclei, which are little tiny particles in the atmosphere upon which the cloud droplets form. You know, liquid cloud droplets have to, each one of those droplets form around some little tiny particulate matter, whether it's natural or man-made. And the reason why I don't really ascribe to the theory that this is going on as a climate change mechanism is because the atmosphere everywhere is continuously filled with these aerosols, with these particulates, these cloud condensation nuclei. They're everywhere, little teeny tiny ones. You can't see them, but they're everywhere. They're naturally generated off the surface of the Earth. And so there's always more than enough of those present to create clouds. So that's why I don't think much of the theory that sunspot activity changes the climate.
Gotcha.
Okay, we'll be right back, Doctor. Thanks for being with
me. Yeah, and perhaps we'll talk about the oceans when we come back. Thank you.
I've got some other things, too.
You feel tired when talking about important topics like money and politics?
Sorry.
Are you confused by words like the Constitution or the Federal Reserve?
What?
If so, you may be diagnosed with the deadliest disease known today, stupidity. Hi, my name is Steve Holt, and like millions of other Americans, I was diagnosed with stupidity at an early age. I had no idea that the number one cause of the disease is found in almost every home in America, the television. Unfortunately, that puts most Americans at risk of catching stupidity, but there is hope. The staff at Brave New Books have helped me and thousands of other Foxaholics suffering from sports zombieism recover. And because of Brave New Books, I now enjoy reading and watching educational documentaries without feeling tired or uninterested. So if you or anybody you know suffers from stupidity, then you need to call 512-480-2503 or visit them at 1904 Guadalupe or BraveNewBookstore.com.
Side effects from using Brave New Books products may include discernment, an enlarged vocabulary, and an overall increase in mental functioning.
We all know that the Berkey water purification systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 4 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey guy offers amazing specials for Berkey water systems. The revolutionary Berkey light systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels, and removes harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey light system today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $209, and the Berkey guy will include three Sport Berkey water bottles and ship everything to you free of charge. That's right, three Sport Berkey water bottles and free shipping, an $87 value, yours free, but only for a limited time. Just call the Berkey guy at 1-877-886-3653 now to order. That's 1-877-886-3653 or order online now at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
You're listening to GCN, the Genesis Communications Radio Network.
Welcome back to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler, along with
Charlotte Littlefield, and welcome back, Dr. Roy Spencer. I'd like to plug your books again. This is our final segment. You wrote The Climate Confusion, How Global Warming Hysteria leads to bad science, pandering politicians, and misguided policies that hurt the poor. And your most recent book, which is entitled The Great Global Warming Blunder. Your website is DR for Dr. DrRoySpencer.com. Welcome back, Dr. Spencer.
Hey, Charlotte, thanks. Thanks for having me on, you and George, tonight.
Yeah. Dr. Spencer, let me inject something that comes in from the UK here a second, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I interviewed Piers Corbyn a while back. Actually, this is right during the Copenhagen conference period, okay? His company is called Weather Action. They predicted the blizzard that blew in about the time that our president flew in there, right, to Copenhagen. They also predicted the weather, the blizzard that swept the Northeast sometime after that. They were basing some of their predictions, and I think their approach is what they call a periodical solar activity effect. The largest observed periodicity present in world temperature data is the 22-year cycle driven by Sun-Earth magnetic connectivity. Hence, for about half the time, the 11-year cycle of solar activity of particles, sunspots, and radiation will move with temperature and half the time move against it. Now, does that have any – I know you said earlier about sun activity and sunspot. Are you taking any of that – are any of the meteorologists taking any of this in America into consideration?
Well, Piers Corbyn's techniques, I think, are viewed with some skepticism. The data that exists for the last several decades about storminess and things like that really is very chaotic. It doesn't suggest any strong periodicities. But then it's the kind of thing where you can just about see anything you want in the data. If you look hard enough, you do see certain it's easy to see what you're looking for in the data, okay? I'm not going to say that there aren't solar cycles in the data. There may be some influence, and I really haven't followed Piers' success and all that. I'm just naturally skeptical about any of these things.
Because of the particular.
Maybe that's why they call me a skeptic, huh?
Okay. Well, you're honest, doctor, about your views.
Well, you know, and I want to tell you or get your comments about something that I heard recently, and I honestly don't understand because I haven't followed the pushers of the global warming, the scientists that are pushing global warming. I haven't really delved into their science at all. But what I'm about to talk to you about is I saw a presentation, and this person was claiming that the oceans, okay, that the oceans overall are heating up. And I don't know, is that true? I mean, I know we see the El Nino.
Yes, when I talked about the warming that we've observed in the last 30 to 50 years, there's reasonably good evidence that the same thing has been going on in the oceans, which it basically has to. You see, the Earth is mostly oceans, and most of the what we call the heat capacity of the climate system is in the oceans. So it's really the oceans that end up driving the long-term climate changes. Whatever the oceans do, whether it's warming or cooling, the atmosphere ends up following, because the atmosphere actually can hold very little heat compared to the oceans. Does that help?
Well, that's interesting that you should say that, because that the presentation, basically what this person was saying, and they are not a scientist, but their angle, they were basically it was a passing comment in an unrelated presentation. So the person that said it is not an authority or anything like that. But he sort of put out there, he said, well, you know, if the oceans are warming, that are, you know, changing the climate, he said, you know, why aren't we looking at the core of the Earth heating up? That there's something going on, and that's when I say the solar connection. There's some sort of energetic connection that the ocean, because if it's not the sun that's heating the ocean up, then perhaps the inner core of the Earth is heating the ocean up.
Okay, the when we say the oceans have warmed, we're talking about the upper several hundred meters of the ocean, you know, just the upper, you know, 10 or 20 or 30%. The very deep ocean is very cold, around 40 degrees Fahrenheit or less, And that's globally. That's even in the tropics.
So there's not going to change.
Even though there is a slow heat flux from the Earth's interior into the ocean, it is very small. It's been measured. And, you know, obviously where there's a volcano on the ocean bottom, it's a lot greater. But those are pretty rare. When you average over the whole Earth, the amount of heat coming from the Earth's core into the ocean is actually very small, and it's generally ignored for the purposes of climate change. The warming that they're talking about is not in the deep ocean. It's in the upper ocean. It's probably related to changes in cloud cover, allowing variable amounts of sunlight to enter into the ocean is probably mostly what's going on there. But, yeah, it's a natural thing to want to suspect changes in heat flow from the Earth into the ocean. Now, while we know that heat flow is very small, I think what we really don't know is how it might have changed over time. That's something, you know, it's sort of one of those wild cards that nobody has looked at because we've got no data. So yeah, what I'm saying is there's sort of a grain of truth to what you're talking about because we know so little about the variability in that heat flow from the bottom of the ocean up into the ocean.
I just thought it was an interesting perspective. And again, the presentation really did not pertain to that at all. It was more of a passing comment. I thought, gosh, you know, I hadn't thought of that. But now if you're telling me that, you know, there seems to be some sort of stability and that you guys are really, the heating is at the top,
Doctor, on this salmon, the study of salmon led to the Pacific Decadal Oscillation. Tell us about that.
Yeah, that was actually the original study that was published on this natural mode of climate variability called the Pacific Decadal Oscillation. It's kind of like the El Nino and La Nina phenomenon, but while those only last a year or two, the Pacific Decadal Oscillation has a cycle of 30 to 60 years. And the original paper that was published on the subject had to deal with the same kind of cycle in salmon productivity off the west coast of North America and off of Canada, that there's a cycle in salmon activity that follows this natural Pacific Decadal Oscillation change in weather patterns out over the North Pacific.
Fascinating.
My God. Well, which came first? Did the study of the salmon cycle give rise to the discovery of the Pacific Oscillation or what?
That I don't know. It's a good question.
So how long do you think...
Because, I mean, in the writings here, it seemed to indicate that it was an insight of some kind. Yeah.
Well, you know, I'm sure that the fishermen knew that there was a cycle going on, and then eventually the meteorologists got involved and connected it to this very slow change in atmospheric and oceanic circulation patterns that seemed to flip-flop every 30 years or so.
Yeah, it seems like
of course they could come to associate, yeah.
It seems like the climatologists, y'all are going to have to be the higher discipline to what I'm trying to say is a lot of times to solve big problems, it takes multidisciplinary involvement.
Excellent segue into my new book, because one of the things I advocate in my new book, The Great Global Warming Blunder, is I've found that the researchers in the climate research community are so inbred now, and they have blinders on. They have such a herd mentality that I'm encouraging people from other disciplines, whether they're engineers or chemists or physicists, to get involved, people with fresh insight to help bring this whole global warming debate, you know, to bring a little more balance to it, because right now it's very, very subjective, not very objective at all. There's too many ulterior motives involved in the whole field.
Mm. Well, when might you write that book?
That's one of the things that I point out in this new book that is now out. The blunder book is
oh, it's in that book.
You need to get more people
it.
Involved in this.
Yeah,
because closing music now coming in.
Yeah, But the climatologists will have to be the overseers. I mean, it's kind of like everybody can bring the information to the table, but since y'all have a further understanding, you guys should be the ones synchronizing it all, pulling it all together. And I hope that you're successful. I do not want a carbon tax. I hope that we can fight off that whole political movement that's underway.